Okay, now we're in business. So I'm gonna take 2 minutes to review, 2 minutes to just wrap up this, what we discussed last time. We saw these really interesting cases of Kehilos that had a takana to follow the Pesachim of the Rambam. The Ran seemed totally open to that idea, you recall. Remember, even in the case where the Kehila had a takana to follow the Rambam's Pesach, he was willing to apply the Rambam's Pesach on Moyes Alai, which was a Shitas Yachid, by which all the other Rishonim seemed to reject, that if a woman has a Tainas Moyes Alai, she could compel a Gerushin, then the Bezin should be Kofa by the Lagarish. The Ran was skeptical only in the particular case, only on the grounds that perhaps since the marriage didn't take place in this town, the town doesn't have jurisdiction. So the husband was not bound by the Takana Sa'ir. That was the only grounds for rejecting the wife's claim. But he seemed totally fine with upholding the Takana to follow the Rambam's Pesachim, even though it's really Issur V'Heter and Arayos, even Arayos cases. He seemed to say that the B'nei Ha'ir have that koach. Then we saw Tshuva V'Tashbetz and Chelek Beis and Reish and Vav. Similar case, also a town that was Mekavla Aleim Ladan Al Pi Piskei Harav, meaning the Rambam. Are they able to rely on the Rambam Shita when it comes to Moyes Alai? Here the Tashbetz was a little more skeptical. He said he did some research. He said that, look, generally people don't follow the Rambam on Moyes Alai. He seemed to say that in his town they have a takana to follow the Rambam, but Moredes and Moyes Alai are some of the exceptions. And so he seemed to think that there perhaps the minhag doesn't extend to Moyes Alai cases. Then he seemed to address whether Yesh Koach Biara Tzibor Lahaskim Al Kayotze Bezeh. And he wanted to say no, Niamarti Lo, Ki Ena Tzibor Hashayim Lahaskim Binyani Isha Sempnei Chomer HaErva. This is very important.
Run the spring screen.
What's that?
Do you mind sharing the screen so we can see along where you're applying?
Oh, my apologies. Here we go. Here we go. In the tshuva of the Tashbetz, he said the question was at this point, Imyesh Koach Biyad Atzibor Lahaskim Achayotze Bazeh. He responds, "Ani amarti lo ki ein atzibur hashayim lahaskin binyan yishus from the chomer ha'erva." V'sheroi lo ladin al piaskama sa'achronim. Better to follow the consensus view of the more recent poskim than to uphold this takana b'nei ha'ir. He seemed to think they don't have that koach when to be mitakein binyan yishus from the chomer ha'arayos to follow the Rambam's pesach when it's a shitas yachid. But then he said, that's only l'chatchila, aval amnasa ma'isa b'mkom u'shenogen al pisparav, ki kasev arash ein machzirin b'davar. So it sounds like he wanted to say, at least on a b'dievet level, even though it's Arayo's case, that takana would be valid. So that's what we discussed last time, and this appears to extend the koach ha-kohol beyond pure dine mamanis, even beyond the idea of a cherem, right, beyond that Ramban's idea of mishpat ha-cherem, deep into the realm of Ishus. In the Ran's case, the Ran seemed to have no scruples in doing so. In the Tashbetz, it's a lot more complicated. He seems to think that Arayos would constitute an exception, though he's willing to concede that Bidyeved, the Takana, might have force. Does anybody want to raise comments about this?
I just have a question.
Yeah, Evan, go ahead.
Is the Tashbetz's concern about, like, specifically this case, but let's say if, you know, the takana was to hold by the Rambam, by another case of non-mamon issue, we would hold. Is there something about Moyes Alai that's like specific, or is it just generally he's not so okay with applying or shying to like the takana outside of mamon?
So my reading is that he's totally fine applying the takana outside of mamon. It's specific to Arayos that, you know, that get, it's the Arayos concern, Nechomer HaErva, that leads the Tashbetz to restrict the koach hakahal. That's my sense. And even within Arayos, he has this distinction between lechatchila and bidiyavet. Right? That's my sense of the Tashbetz. Make sense, Evan? You agree? Okay. Gani, does this make sense to you? Sounds good? I think it is pretty, it is pretty extreme. I mean, Gabe, I think Gabe's been trying to say this is all pasha, but Gabe, do you think this is so obvious or there's some chiddush here that the kahal has this koach? From Gabe?
Nothing in particular. Or nothing new, I'd say.
Meaning you think it's fine. There's no chiddush here.
No, I think this is a chiddush, but I think it's the same chiddush that I've been pointing to previously.
Great.
Yeah, even if the Kyle does have this koach, it still seems like there's some system of checks and balances which is implicit, but not really explicated anywhere. And I think Binyana Ishus Mipnei Chomer Ha'erva is an example of that.
Right. Though you would acknowledge that even, maybe Lechatchila B'diavad distinction within the Chomer Ha'erva, right?
Yeah.
Good. So the last thing we discussed in the last Habura was this theory that comes out of the Rambam about a lot of the Takanos and the Gemara and the Gzeros being valid only because they're in Espashet B'chol Yisrael. I thought that was very important. Part of what gives these Takanos and the Gemara their normative force is their widespread acceptance amongst the individuals of Bnei Yisrael. And that's what allows the Rambam to say that the Takanos of the Gaonim fail to have this binding halachic authority, because once the Gaonim came around, there no longer was this centralized Jewish authority. Their communities were much more dispersed. Nobody's authority or takana was accepted widely by all of Bnei Yisrael. And so for the Rambam, that creates this fundamental gap, fundamental distinction between the halachic authority of the Talmud, that was Nispashet B'chol Yisrael, and the halachic authority of the Gaonim, which in the Rambam's view is not Nispashet B'chol Yisrael. Remember in the Hakdama to Mishnah Torah, the Rambam said, "Kol beizin she'amar achar agmar b'chol medina medina v'gazar o'hiskin o'hineg l'vnei medinasan o'vnei medinas ha'rabos lo pashtu ma'isa b'chol Yisrael b'nei richuk mosh v'oseyem v'shibash ha'drachim." And that's why none of those takanos are binding on all of Klal Yisrael together. So what I think this speaks to is the central role that acceptance by the individual members of Klal Yisrael plays in the normative force, the normative authority even of these takanos and gzeros. It's not sufficient that, some body legislature enacted them. What's crucial is that they're in Espashe B'chol Yisrael. In the Rambam in Minyan HaMitzvos, in his very short summary at the end, you see this idea appearing again. The Rambam says these are the 613 mitzvos. In addition to that, there are some mitzvos drabanan, yesh mitzvos acher shenishkachad shu achar matan Torah, v'kavu osan neviyim v'chachamim, upashtu b'chol Yisrael. Rambam feels the need to add that these additional mitzvos, these mitzvos drabanan, spread throughout Bnei Yisrael. Kigon, Mikra Megillah, Ner Chanukah, Tainus Tishba, V'yadayim, V'irvin. Sounds like the Rambam thinks that Pashtu B'chol Yisrael is part of what gives these mitzvos their binding oomph. And that's consistent with the Rambam in the Hakdama to the Yad HaChazaka. Shula, do you have a thought on this?
Do I have a thought on this? Yeah. I'm kind of in the middle of a computer training, so I don't know how much I should.
I can tell because you're dressed finally.
Yeah. So I could. I don't know how much talking I'll be doing, but this is
for Kavod HaTorah. You don't get dressed, right? Enough, like an undershirt and tzitzis is enough. But for
punk fakert. It's not how I. It's not how I learn Torah. It's how I wear an undershirt and tzitzis. You know.
Oh, very good. All right.
For those, for the Gush kids, in the Chabur, punk fakert means just the opposite.
All right, that's enough.
Wow, I guess Shua is dishing it today. Italian, you know.
Shua enjoys correcting the Yiddish of alumni of Yeshivat Har Etzion. It's a favorite pastime of his.
Yeah, it's why Zukir hates me.
All right, you said it.
Good stuff. So what do you think about these Rambams? I mean, also if you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim, Perek Beis Halacha Hey, just to round out the theory, you can see in Halacha Vav, the Rambam says, Harei shegazru bezin gzera v'dimu sherov ha'kal yichom lamad ba, v'achar shegazru pikpiku ha'amba, v'lo pashta barov ha'kal harei ze b'teila, v'einan rasha en lochufas al malachas ba. So if you see a necessary condition of takanos having binding authority is that they actually spread to Rov Hakal. And if they don't spread in the right way, they're not accepted, they're not taken up by the people, then they're just void ab initio and no one has the right to enforce them.
Itamar?
Yes.
Do we think, so there are two ways to read like that Rambam. One is that I don't know if these are two different. You'll tell me if you think these are two different ways. One way to read that Rambam is that basically the system is democratic, and what makes a particular takana valid is like some kind of, you know, informal vote, right? If the majority of the people are obeying it, so it's valid for everybody. That's one possibility. Another possibility, I think it's distinct, is that really the source of the authority is Takanas Bezdin. It is just the fact that the Bezdin said, you know, decided that, you know, people were going to do some particular thing. But if it turns out that whatever it is isn't effective, the particular takana isn't obeyed by a majority of the people, so Bezdin loses the right to enforce it for some other reason, because it's ineffective. Whereas it's not that the people's disobeying it is what invalidates the takana, but rather it's what deprives Bezdin of the right to like prosecute people for violating it.
So I like your, right now, for like the way it fits into the presentation and the theory that I've been building, I think that this speaks to the koach takana itself is, to use your phrase, you know, quasi-democratic. It's noveya from like the individual sovereignty of the B'nai Ha'ir, right? Or the constituent members of Klal Yisrael. And Beis Din is this representative of the people generally, and that's where the koach takana flows from. Yeah.
In that reading, would a minhag have the same weight as a takana?
Yeah, so that's exactly what that's why we're here, Gabe. Just, you know, to remind us how we got into Vav Vasar Daf Ches, is the idea of Darshinan Lashon Hegyot and the Ramban's characterization of it, that it's Kitznai Bezdin, right? Kitakanas Bezdin. That's how we got here. And the argument that I've been making for the last few weeks is exactly this point, that you could circumvent the formal takana sometimes when the custom has been taken up by the B'nai Ha'ir directly. Right? That's exactly why it has Koach Bezdin. Because the Koach Takana resides in the B'nai HaKahal themselves. Gabe, is that?
Yeah, I mean, I know that's your reading. I guess I led you into that point. But we use different language for these things, and we think of them as having different weights. Halachically, and the Rambam develops a hierarchy of Zeiros Takanos Minhagim, and so for him, these are different concepts.
For the Rambam, you're saying that So what's, I mean, we could get deeper into this. If you're saying that the theory contradicts some doctrinal or some widely accepted distinction between the koach takanas bezdin and the koach minhag, then I'm in trouble. Which it sounds like you're making some argument along those lines. But I'd want to see you build up that counter argument first before I respond to it.
Yeah, I would need to think about it a little bit more, but I guess like particularly in this halacha, I think some aspect of Kol's reading Kol's second reading feels valid here, that there's something about the fact that this was nigzar by Beis Din, which is significant and not just incidental, and so there's a two-party authority here. Beis Din sort of presents the authority, and there's a haskamas hakahal, but I don't think Gzeir would carry the same weight without both of those stems of approval.
Right, so my response that gave is that the fact that it originates from Beis Din is contingent. I mean, it's just a contingent feature of how these procedures are usually carried out, right? Because it's not like the Kahal usually has this kind of constitutional convention and gets together and says, we're mitaking that, whatever. Right? Usually it's, you know, the law emerges from the people who think about the law, right? Not the people who think about milking cows and tailoring suits, right? So that's just like an incidental feature of where these takanos would normally come from, but it doesn't speak to where the legal power to make these takanos resides. I'll flesh that a little more in a second. Oh, Gabe, you could respond first if you want.
No, I'm not going to respond. I accept the difference. I don't have enough data to prove my point, but I think what you're saying is pretty significant chiddush and definitely isn't conventional wisdom. So I guess even though this is your chabur, word no proof is on me, but I'll do my best.
So first, I want to say two things. First of all, it's our chabura, it's not my chabura. So, you know. It's true that I just incidentally happen to be the most correct in my views of everyone else here. No, actually, it's probably not even true. But so it's not my chabura, it's ours. Second of all, I like that it's a chiddush, right? Like we don't need to be here if we could just take this out of the back of the masifta, right?
Not that you're necessarily opposed to that sort of thing.
right. Yeah, good. Adin, you want to comment?
Yeah. So I overall, I do just like my initial leaning is to your reading, Itamar, and the idea that like that we are drawing from the same like reservoir of authority. Just it's coming through different ways. But I wonder if and you could argue this is just a feature. I'll get to what you could argue in a second. Like, does the mutability of the greater mutability of minhag in opposition, as opposed to classic gezeira or takana, at all complicate that reading in the sense that, like you said, minhag doesn't usually get developed by a convention, but it could be that the economic minhag of the year 1950 just slowly shifts, and by the time we get to the year 2000, it's a totally different minhag. At no point was there an announcement that like we're switching to a new minhag. Whereas presumably, like even if Teaneck or Riverdale or whoever decides to stop keeping Purim, that doesn't like we don't say that they have the. And maybe to others, it's just a technical requirement of like you need a base in Gadol, over whatever. But it seems that halacha is more willing to accept minhag changing than it is a gzera changing.
Well, I mean, I would just say that, as Gabe said initially, there are going to be limits on even takanos, and there'll be limits also on minhagim. So, like your example about Purim, Ram says that was already nispashe b'chol Yisrael, and nobody, not even a bezin, could change that nowadays, right? So those hard and fast limits will be there regardless of which reservoir of halachic power we're drawing from, right?
But the limits aren't. But you're trying to like, can we still say that they're operating on the same principle? Like, at what point do the differences between the two? Between the differences between minhag and takana force us to like at a certain point they're different enough that we'd have to say that they're not functionally the same thing, and like where do we draw that line?
Okay, so what I'm gonna say is that if you and Gabe could show that there's this deeply embedded distinction between minhag and takana, blah 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 blah, you know, and you start bringing these rayos. My response would be to say that the real distinction that's relevant is going to cut across, or to be orthogonal to, the distinction between minhag and takana. You'll have some takanos like Rashan B'nai Ha'ir, some of them are going to be, you know, weak takanos, right? Or just, you know, takanos for economic reasons that could be repealed and replaced. And then you'll have some minhagim that are deeply entrenched and that have this real halachic authority that are binding l'dorei doros, right? So my point is that it's not going to, the distinction that you're going to draw, that you're going to show, is not really going to be a distinction between minhag versus takana. It's going to be a distinction between some minhagim and takanos on the one hand and other kinds of minhagim and takanos on the other hand. Right? That's the way I would respond to that. But we could cross that bridge when we get there, which I think will be an interesting discussion. Okay, so I want to just add one more Rambam to this picture. So we have the Rambam in his discussion of the Chiddush HaSmicha. So the Rambam's famous view in the Chiddush HaSmicha, and I just want to tell us al regal achas what the view is. Grouchy neocon, do you want to tell us what the Rambam's view of Chiddush HaSmicha is? Have I seen Cole changed his name to Grouchy Neocon? But he's frozen.
Aren't those two terms redundant?
Yeah, Cole's gone. He's frozen, so we'll hold off on him. Yeah, Kira, you want to tell us about the Rambam on Chiddush HaSmicha?
Can you hear me?
Ah, now we hear you, but you're a little frozen.
I can hear you. I'll be quiet.
We hear you. Okay. Yeah, Kira, do you want to tell us about the Rambam on Chiddush HaSmicha?
Sure, yeah. So, in brief, the Rambam thinks that if you have agreement among the people or the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael to appoint someone, they have the status of a samach.
Yeah, that's right. Meaning, even though for some things you require a smicha, ishmi pi, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rambam thought that you could renew smicha through haskamas, rov b'nei Eretz Yisrael. In Perush HaMishnayis, in Hilchos Bechoros Dalet Gimel, the Rambam says that a bez din samach is there either samach mipi samach, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, or haskamas b'nei Eretz Yisrael, l'mnosa rosh yeshiva. Fisha b'nei Eretz Yisrael, heimanik rayim kahal. Bashem Karam Kol HaKahal, etc. What I thought is really important about this Rambam's formulation is what, Dani? What do you find really important about this formulation? Who does the Rambam appeal to here? Dani?
Like the, what's it called, that the kahal here is the people of Eretz Yisrael, like is just the lay people?
Yeah, right. Rambam says that it's the B'nai Eretz Yisrael, Afilu Hemasara, and this is because they have this shame kahal. And I think it's striking that the Rambam here doesn't, you know, say it's not the Chachme Eretz Yisrael, he just says Haskamas B'nai Eretz Yisrael. That's sufficient to resurrect like the most important like religious institution of like the like smicha, like is that's like the real koach ra and the real koach of the rabbanos. And the Rambam thinks that like you know, if you asara, people of Eretz Yisrael, they have the koach to resurrect this religious chalos, this chalos smicha. I think that's, it's really remarkable. Gabe?
This is worth pointing out that there's another source of authority, which is Samach Mipi Samach, which is a more a top-down or divine grant.
Okay. But so that's nice. We could talk about the relationship between Samach Mipi Samach and the B'nai Eretz Yisrael being Mechadesh Mika. I think the fact that, you know, there's these two options itself is intriguing. But Gabe, how do you, you know, you're the one who has the most reservations about the argument that I've been putting forward here. What do you think of this, Rambam?
I don't know. I don't think that Beis Din's authority is divorced from. I need a few minutes to articulate my thought, but I guess like on the surface, I'll say that Beis Din is also interpreting like Mishpat, which they've received. So like, we need to be clear that their authority isn't purely democratic authority. There's no assumption. Apiat Torah Shayarucha is not entirely democratic.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't have much like skin in the game of like democracy, and you know, that's not really what I'm excited about here. Only Israelis get excited about democracy. Americans care about liberalism. Israelis like Medina Yehudit Demokrati, like you know. Democracy is supposed to like stand for all that's enlightened in Israel. I mean, I don't really care about democracy here. My question is more when we think about where some of this halachic authority resides, does it reside in the kahal, right? Or does it reside per se in this separate class called the chachamim or tamid chachamim, whatever it might be? And, you know, The question of what political procedure is used to get at the will of the kahal, that's less exciting to me. That's what you call like democracy, I guess. You know, but the notion of like where's the reservoir, to borrow Adin's metaphor, does the reservoir lie in the kahal per se? That's the question that I'm interested in, and I think the Rambam's formulation here is just very telling, right? It's the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. That's not a mistake you can make. If you think it resides just in the chachamim, Zachary, you have thoughts on this?
I'm mostly kind of leaning towards your reading of this. I kind of wonder about the characterization of smicha as kind of like just a purely religious halos. That seems to be the pashtos, but I mean, maybe we could suggest kind of direction in which that. Well, if the main act of a musmach is kind of applying din, then if everyone kind of accepts them as a dayan upon themselves, is it so different than kind of like our kind of more modern example of kind of accepting a posek ha'ir?
Right, right. But
it is very different that smicha is kind of, like you said, religious chalos. But
yeah, and it's going to extend into ishas, right, and arayos, right? Fia Ligarish is an important feature of it. So I don't want to say it's merely a religious thing, but it's certainly also a religious thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the Rambam doesn't say that Heskin B'nei Ha'ir only works with respect to some aspects of smicha, right? He says this will reintroduce smicha altogether, right?
Right. I mean, you can even wonder about the Samach with the Samach, maybe that's based off also a kind of a, either from our Sinai or from Yoshua, kind of like a kahal event.
Yeah, I think that's totally, I think that's what I was going to get at with Gabe. Gabe was saying, oh, like, what's the relationship between these two different ways of getting at smicha? It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting to think on those terms. I didn't comment, and then we'll compare the Rambam and Perush Mishnayos to the Sanhedrin.
Yeah, so I think this formula, like, I just, maybe this insight is so obvious that, like, the thought just popped into my head that we said, oh, there's a separate class of chacham where we want to entertain that possibility. Ultimately, a musmach or a chacham is just simply someone picked out from that kahal. Like, obviously, it could be hard, but, like, that, like, it could, you're suggesting that to not view those as two separate, like, institutions that, like, that so we it seems like this parish from Mishnayos is like just that there's some sort of Zeres HaKasev that Anshei Eretz Yisrael are have the official standing of Kahal. So of course they have the ability to appoint a Kahal has the ability, like if they are just like a Kahal has the ability to teach someone Torah and for them to be appointed a Chacham, like they have the ability to institute Smicha because that's what a Kahal can do. Like you almost use it as tautological. Like since they are Kahal, it must be they have the ability to appoint a mushmach or something like that.
Right, but it's still a further chiddush to say that the power to be memane or to generate smicha resides in the kahal. That's really the Rambam's, right? That's the Rambam's chiddush.
Yeah. I think it said that he almost undersells it by viewing like the chiddush is like implicit on like he doesn't say lefisha bnei Yisrael haim like natnu lahem reshut lismoch mashu. It's like the fact that they are a kahal, that is definitionally what allows some, like a kahal has the authority to appoint a mushmach.
Yes, I think you're right. Yes, I think you're right to show that the Rambam doesn't even think it needs further argument to show that the kahal has that authority, right? The Rambam just takes like the heavy lifting for the Rambam is just to establish that the Bnei Eretz Yisrael have this chalos kahal. And then it trivially follows once they have this chalos kahal that they have this kalach smicha. And I think, Adin, you're saying that reinforces the tight connection, at least in the Rambam's view, between power of the kahal and the power to generate smicha, right?
Yeah, or the so like the authority of chachamim or the authority of dayanim based in smuchim is clearly, at the very least, at its outset, is dependent on, like, to create that power in the first place, you need a kahal.
Good. Let's look at the Rambam in Sanhedrin, Perek Dalet Halachot Aleph in Mishnah Torah. Here, the Rambam uses a different phrase. Harish lo hayber etz yisrael al samech echad, moshev shnayim betzido v'samech shivim ke'echad, avzeh achar zeh, v'achkach yaseh huva shivim bez magadol, v'yismechu bat deginim acherim, nirin li hadvarim, she'im hiskimu kol hachachamim shever etz yisrael, limnos dayanim v'lismechu, samharei v'smuchem. So here the Rambam switches to chachamim. Interesting. So how do we explain that? Shemesh schemu kol achachamim shever etz Yisrael.
I just have a question on the, I guess, beforehand.
Sure.
Just, are we 100% in that there's actually some, as you said, like religious kalos happening here, and we're not just saying like, oh, these guys represent us, you know, in terms of who, in terms of court, like these are our, you know, court seat picks.
I just think that when you're talking, they're always talking about being re-mechadesh smicha, and smicha is more to, you know, it's not just like electing a Knesset. It's not just a pure like dine mamonis choshen mishpat power. It has these powers that extend into ishus, right? At least ostensibly. That the kofelagarish, things like that, Evan, right? So it seems to me that there's at least got to be, you know, the bezin of Shivan B'Echad has the power to have like binding psakim on all Klal Yisrael, right? So where does that come from? And so, you know, if smicha is not a religious power, doesn't include religious powers, I don't know what religious power is, right? Unless it's going to your makubal to, undo some sort of curse that you got, right? And I'm just kidding. That's clearly not a religious power. So if smicha is not like the, religious authority for hora and arayos, then I'm at a loss as to what is.
Could it still be a religious authority, but not, I guess, not through some other aspect other than just the people, like through, I guess it's through, that's what we were saying before, it's like through a democratic process, so never mind.
Okay, good. It's a lot to think about here. Evan, you wanted to say something? Okay. So how do we make sense that the Rambam switches in Sanhedrin Dalet Aleph to Hiskimu Kol Chachamim Shever Eretz Yisrael?
You might have been assuming that, like, we weren't going to do direct institution of smicha. I'm not sure these things are so different.
Yeah, good, cool. Just we flush it out. There. You went out for
maybe seconds. The Rambam thought that we were going to recreate smicha by a plebiscite. But probably what he had in mind is that, all is that the, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva we're going to get together and decide.
Yeah, I agree, right? It wasn't going to be like, you know, the Hamonam getting together, but what allows the Rambam to move from the B'nai Eretz Yisrael to the Chachamim between Parashat Mishnayos and Mishnah Torah? Like, why is that?
Presumably it's because the Chachamim are already, it's kind of implicit that they represent the Kahal.
Yeah, I think Cole's right. Right? The idea is that the reservoir of halachic authority, which the Chachamim are drawing from, is the Kahal, and they're just like the representatives of the Kahal and getting this done. Is that right, Cole?
I want to add something that I don't know if you'll find congenial. So there, I mean, this may seem like an obvious point, but I think it is significant that the Ram, in comparison to, like, you know, so this is a huge chiddush of the Rambam, not just because it's like amazing, by which I just mean astonishing that you could like recreate smicha, if indeed smicha is the sort of thing that can be lost. That's not uncontroversial. The Ran at the beginning of Sanhedrin has a different view about how smicha works effectively. But fine. So let's assume that it's, you know, from that, you know, smicha, like, you know, classically understood, is, you know, kind of like authorization you get from somebody who got an authorization from, and so on, from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not that's a huge challenge, is that the recreation, you guys,
you're going in and out, so you have the recreation.
Can you hear me now? Okay. That the recreation of it could, I mean, these are very vague criteria the Rambam, when you think about it. This is not like, you know, and then the American people are going to cast their votes on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, and the electors from the states who will have been chosen at such and such times. I mean, these are extreme, this is no way to run a political regime. This is like, I mean, like, just the Rambam is unbelievably vague in this respect. What I think that testifies to is that, I mean, it could be, I think this is congenial to your point, Itamar. It's like authority in the halachic system about these kinds of things derives from the result of from the empirical reality of like power being exercised by somebody and obeyed by the people. We're used to, in the West, we're used to, like, you know, if somebody said, imagine you had a world, okay, in which like the American people voted and it was clear to everybody who won the election, okay, and then a majority of the people, okay, decided that that was illegitimate and so on and so forth. So there would be a lot of interesting political analysis about what that meant, but probably it wouldn't be true that the election was thereby illegitimate just because a majority of the people thought it was. We would, but just that those aren't the rules. The Rambam seems to have in a sense, a much more like majoritarian, is probably the right word for it, but there's probably a more subtle way to do it. But just like the legitimacy of a particular bit of legislation derives just from its being obeyed. And is deprived of legitimacy from its being disobeyed. And the same is true, I think, which is pretty amazing. That's just authority derives from practice.
Yeah, it's definitely congenial to the main idea that I'm putting forward of like the minhag has the same right legal force as the takana. There's nothing about, like, the procedures don't have...
Procedures are sort of incidental.
Correct. Yeah, that's a good way.
Which is, I just want to be clear to everybody, is radically opposed to the way we think about legitimate government in the West, where procedure is everything. Procedure is, as Christine Korsgaard says, justice is a matter of procedure.
All right, great. or Rawls calls pure procedural justice. All right, so good. This is really, really excellent. Anybody have closing thoughts before we move on to the last two sections here? Okay. Gabe, Donnie, you have closing thoughts on this? No? Gabe, you have a closing thought on this? Okay. So I want to look at these last two sections of our discussion of Rosh Hashanah and Bnei Yair and wrap this up. So the first part of our first of the two parts is this idea of the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir. Now, the Gemara in Bava Basra is about Rosh Hashanah and Bnei Yair. Lasial Kitzasan, that was a sigi we saw in Bava Basra. Well, you're hilarious. So the Gemara is Rosh Hashanah and Bnei Yair Lasial Kitzasan. So it's a power that the Bnei Yair have. But oftentimes they don't have to exercise the power directly. They could use their representatives to get at the vote, like as a voting procedure, that would speak in the name of the people. So in the same way, the way that Cole was suggesting for the Rambam, that the Chachamim have this koach in virtue of their representing the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, so too the structure that the Gemara assumes about a Kehila has these Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir who have authority in virtue of their having been appointed by the Kehila to represent them as, let's say, trustees in matters pertaining to the ear. So I'll just give you a few examples of this. You have a famous Tshuva of the Rashba and Chelek Aleph Siman Tafresh Yud Zayin. The Rashba was asked about some takana that was made by the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir. And it's not clear if the ear itself consented, the people themselves consented to this. So there was this question that was sent to the Rashba, and he answers the following. V'aktim l'cha hakdama, ki shiva tuvei ha'ir ha'muzkarim b'chol makom, einan shiva anashim ha'muvcharim b'chachma v'osher v'chavod. When the Gemara assumes that there are these shiva tuvei ha'ir who speak for the city, they're not like the smartest or the most chashev or the wisest people of the town. Rather, they're defined by the fact that they're shiva anashim shehem yiduhu hatzivor parnasim stam Right? What gives them their halachic or legal power is the fact that the tzibor appointed them as trustees, as apotropsim, to do all the tzarchei ha'ir things that need to be done. He says that Tosefta calls them parnasim, like the parnes ha'ir. And then he says, well, why does the Gemara talk about seven? Shouldn't the count really just be a function of how many people the community appointed? And the Rashba says, Im kishekibu aleihem afilu echad, he thinks this is what the Yerushalmi is getting at, if the community appoints, let's say, a single president as the president of their community, then that guy speaks in the name of the community. Right? So if they say the president's voice is our voice, then the president gets to make binding rules for the community. But if they didn't appoint the board members, then even if you have 50, 100 board members, they don't have the right legal authority to make decisions for the kahal. So he says, the Rashba says, the way to figure this out is, this is what he explains to Yushalmi, Im kishakibu aleihem b'nei ha'ir, so if the trustees were appointed by the kahal such that anything they do is binding, then anything they do is binding. If they're not authorized in the right way, they have no power. But if you just appoint a stam board without expressly determining the scope of their powers, there's no constitution that says exactly what the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir can do, then if you appointed seven people, which is like a significant number, then they have Rashus L'chol Davar, Ki Ilu Asu Kein Kol B'nei Ha'ir. Even if min b'nei ha'ir, from the townsmen. So what's the scheme that the Rashba sets up here? Very crucial scheme for determining legitimate authority. What's his main framework?
Communal acceptance of a representative body.
Yeah, so communal acceptance, right?
Greater than seven, so like a significant body of representation, and then either stam or like a specific authorization for certain of them.
Exactly. So he says, if you're specifically authorized by the community, then you have the power with respect to your authorization. If you're not authorized, then you have no power. If you're a significant number, so like you're, it's a, you know, a reasonable a body of representatives, then if you're Mimune Stam without any clear constitution explaining the scope of the powers, then Mina Stam you're Mimune Al Kol Tzarchei Ha'ir, right? As if, he says, you speak, as if Kilu also came Kol B'nei Ha'ir, right? Then you speak for the people on all these matters. You know, I do think this has to be qualified somewhat. So like, you know, today, if you're a member of a shul and you have a board, you know, it's not reasonable to think that the community is appointing the board to make parking laws and collect taxes from the tzibor, right? It's, you might say just it's almost implied that the board doesn't have that power. It's an interesting question whether participation in, you know, just regular elections gives like the political appointees halachic power in virtue of the fact that like the B'nai HaKol participate in democratic elections. So, you know, people always talk about Dina de Malchus Adina. It seems to me that Rashayin B'nai Ha'ir through the Netzige Ha'ir is a better way at getting at the binding halachic authority of political representatives in contemporary society, right? So when we vote for board members in our shul, we're not thinking that they're going to exercise political control over us, but we do think that when we vote in elections, right, for our assemblymen and for Senate and whatever, it seems to me that should work through Rashayin B'nei Ha'ir. And that's kind of what the Rashba is getting at in this tshuva, right? It's a sovereign power that the B'nei Ha'ir have, but they entrust it in certain representatives through empowering them as apitropsin. Anybody just, you have thoughts on this Chivas Rashba here? I think it's a very novel argument for about political authority in halacha. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we could do the same thing with our shul, you know, or YU trustees, right? When we vote for them, if we vote, but we don't endow them, we don't entrust them with that political power, right? We usually circumscribe that power to just specific, you know, communal policies, like whether the shul should allow a kiddush club or something like that, right? Zachary, you had a thought?
Yeah, I think it's pretty, I don't know where the first makor about the Shiva Tuve Ir is, other than, I guess, the Yerushalmi here, but like the Gemara, like the Bava Basra Gemara only kind of phrased it, like the Adam Chashev, as kind of a Monea, as a Ma'akev, as in, okay, he's going to represent the will of everyone else when the Omanim are getting together. And it's kind of represented as an actively generating, you know, just on their own. It's kind of a pretty wild expansion than what we find in the Bavli.
You're saying the idea that you could entrust, like,
delegate power, yeah, and trust people.
Yeah. I think it comes up in the Gemara's in Megillah when it talks about selling a Beis HaKnesses. Mm-hmm. The assets of the city could be reassigned or sold through the approval of the Shiva Tuve Ir. So as a concept, it comes up in the Bavli. The Yerushalmi here is just telling us that, at least in the Rashba's interpretation of the Yerushalmi, that the scope of the powers of the Tuve Ha'ir is defined by how the people delegate it to them. Right, yeah. Okay. And, you know, I think, you know, Cole's point of the Rambam is similar, right? Sometimes the Chachamim are considered to be the Nitzigim, the representatives of the B'nai Eretz Yisrael in the Smicha case. Let me mention another tshuva of the Rashba. So this is, the second tshuva is Gimel Tafmem Gimel. This is an interesting case. And again, he uses that same formulation that the Mimune HaKahal are the apitropsim, which is the idea like they're the trustees of the Kahal. this is a case, this happened all the times in Jewish, all the time in Jewish communities, whole fight about this in Englewood. Basically, you have a shul board, they vote to redo the shul, costs a lot of money, and they raise membership dues to cover the costs, right? So in the Rashba's case, it's about taxes, actually, which is a little stronger. So do the Tuvei Ha'ir have this legal authority to impose the financial consequences of their decisions on the individual members of the town? We get Shua back here. Shua, you're like, Yotze v'nechnas on us. Here he is. He's back. Frozen. Hey, Shua. We know he's not back to stay because he's still wearing a collared shirt. No. Once we see Tzitzis, then we know he's here to stay. That's the rule. So the Rashban Gimel Tafmem Gimel talks about this kind of case. So is Hiskimu Habrurim Belishum Atzas HaKohol. Interesting. Cole, you should be intrigued by this, right? So the representatives got to this conclusion without consulting with the people. The Kasvu Sheskimu Daitan with talking as base akneses vechrim aldas hamakom aldas hakol sheyu muchrachim aburim lasos osam lachol zman yedua v'shas achem lo hayu base akneses machtes hakol miktas mechamishim goy amas. So that there wasn't full representation of the tzibor, or of the, at least the people of the tzibor, when the community, when the representatives made this takana or this agreement to refinance the, or renovate the shul. So the Rashba responds, and he says, "Mikol makom." It's true that the machtis hakol wasn't there, or there wasn't enough representation from the actual people. Mikol makom also shahayu sham him gedolei hamas min hachamisha sham amdu haarba v'shar hakol asher sham huchram. Meaning, Hagam, that most of the Kaha wasn't there, the representatives were there, right? And he says, Afilu lo hayusham brurim gidole hamas v'ktsas hakol osim kazeh. Sorry, v'ktsas hakol. Even if these people weren't there, even if some of the, like, the experts on tax collection weren't there, osim kazeh shebechol kaha v'kol ein nimnan milasos takonos v'charamos v'kiyumim. No community requires like an actual representation of rov members of the kahal. Why? Right? He's saying, because what really matters is that the right representatives of the kahal be there. Because nobody requires actual individual representation. The apitropsim are sufficient, the trustees. Upamim kal gadol yil elef lo yiskapsimam rakish loshim ar bayim yosem lacha and afa pichein, the takanos are binding. And he gives this pragmatic argument. Shem iata omer kain lo yichlu b'shum kal lasos melacha ulohotzi shum hotza v'lo lasos shum takana klalis ashe yiskapsu sham kol hakol pore amas. And that would just be inconceivable, right? It would be inconceivable to not allow takanos until everyone's there. And then he has this comment, which I put out into the WhatsApp chat last week. What's he saying in this concept? So he's saying, you wouldn't get any results achi yaskimu kulam bedavar. V'hanashim achi yaskimu bedavar kulam. V'hanashim ki anashim ki mi yigzar amamonam below rishusam. My exclamation point. What's he saying in that line? I like this this point.
And if you think you need everybody, then we're going to have to invite the woman as well for community meetings and lo yitachin.
No, I don't think he's saying lo yitachin to invite them. I think he's saying, right, well, he's saying you'd even need the woman to show up because, after all, who could make a gezeira about their money without their permission? That's the way I read that line. Am I misreading it?
No, I agree. But he's saying, like, we would have to have literally every single adult in the agreement.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I think it's, so that's his reductio ad absurdum, right? He's saying you would even need like the woman to show up to the meetings and every single member of town. That's impossible. I thought it's cool that he throws in this line of Kimi Yigzar Amamona below Roshusa, right? He's suddenly he's so worried about like women's properties. You know, he's not saying, oh, of course, like their husbands you know, get to decide for them, or he says it's their money that's on the line, so they would need to be present in order to bind themselves to the takanos. And he's saying that's inconceivable. So Ella Shegidolia Mas with Tasmanakal Krue Haeda Kapitropin al Yeser Hakal. And that's where you get to this representation, this delegate system, where he thinks it's just got to be that the trustees could vote on behalf of the people they represent. Okay. There's a Chuva de Ma'abit where he makes a similar point. Not going to go into such detail, but he says he has two nice formulations. He also he cites the Chuva Sarashba, and he says, Masha Yesh Lahem Rishus L'Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir B'chol Davar, who mishum de chashivi ruba, mishum de asu mikoach ruba, de kiblu alehem bistam lefakeach al kolen yane hatzibor. Very nice formulation. So what's he saying in this formulation? Anybody want to help us with what he's saying here? What's the key point? Why do the netzigim, like why is there this koach takana to the netzige ha'ir? So it's mishum de asu mikoach ruba de kiblu aleihem, right? It's because they have the, right? They draw on the reservoir of the koach of rov hatzibor. And then this gets to Cole's point. Cole, you should really like this. Cole? So you should really like this following point. He says, so in a case where you're mekabel the leadership stam, without enumerating their powers or the scope of their powers, yesh lahem reshus b'chol davar k'ilu asu kol b'nei ha'ir, right? So they speak on behalf of the people. Haynu l'takin v'ligzor mashi yir lahem. So the leaders can make takanos. V'yodiyum, they should inform the people of their takanos. V'im yishtiku v'lo yisarvu yiekayim. If the people don't repudiate it, right? They don't rebel against the takana. They don't refuse the takana. Then it's binding. V'im yisarvu, but if they do repudiate it, az lo yiyu chayav m'kayim masha tiknu, ela imkein amru b'feira shekiblam aleim la'oso davar yadua. Unless, like, they specifically authorize the kahal to have, the leaders to have power on this issue. So take, for example, a kahila that the president and the board of trustees says that everyone has to wear a mask in shul. I should say, like, they make that takana, and if you don't, then, you know, b'koa chirem uva'ala, whatever, you'll be penalized and knast and something like that. Does the kahila have that authority? So the Mabit thinks, if when you elected the board, you gave them that kind of power explicitly, then they have the authority. But if it wasn't enumerated, it wasn't delegated to them, which is probably the case in, you know, all these kinds of takanos cases that are coming about now, then it really depends on whether the kahal, when they find out about it, accept it or repudiate it. If the kahal takes it up, then it gains legitimacy. If it's repudiated by the kahal, then it's illegitimate.
I mean, isn't that different than like a representative body though? That's just saying we are going to appoint some guys to draft the takanot, and then the masses will agree upon it, which is, I think, different than what we saw before, which was we provide authority to some group and they're to the representative body, and what they say goes regardless of if the kahal erupts in disapproval.
Right. So notice there are two different cases. One's a case where you explicitly grant them power to decide all of these social and political issues. Right? Then the kahal, by delegating the power to the representatives, waives their right to repudiate it en masse. But if it was just like the stam appointment, right, without specifying that the president has the power to tell us to wear masks, we even contemplated that when they voted for a president of a shul. Then, as you put it very nicely, yeah, he's just like drafting the thing, and whether or not it becomes like legally binding depends on whether it's taken up by the actual community members.
Yeah, I think that might also tie back to what we were saying in the beginning, what Gabe was saying, I believe, which is I don't remember who it was, but the idea between drafting, the ability to draft the laws and the ability to sort of accept the Takanot as being, which one's like the Kawach there.
Yeah. You want to flesh that out a little more, Evan?
Yeah. So what we were saying before in the Parish Mishnaya was that the Takanot's Kawach enforcement and their acceptance might be two different things. Right, so we're saying that their enforcement is based off of either their acceptance by the Rova Am or by their drafting or koach based in, and then it just one of the necessities or one of the hurdles is it has to be pashtu b'chol am. And here it's a similar idea, which is you're either So you're either saying that the rove is able to elect a majority, elect an official or a representative that whose then power is to draft, which is I think the sentence that we just saw a few minutes ago, which is the Hiblu HaRov, right? So the once you have that majority, right? Yeah, right. The Asu Mikoach Ruva. Versus this idea that really it's they're just drafting and the power is from the acceptance of the Am.
I think that was Cole's distinction that he raised in the Rambam initially. I think that's what you're getting back. Yeah,
Cole, not Gabe, sorry.
Right. Yeah. Good. I think that's totally right. I mean, you do see this along these lines in this Tshuva the Mabit. But the difference I think is that Cole was more interested in is it like a koach bezdin so long as the kahal approves it? Or is it a koach ha-kahal just voiced through bezdin?
Right, exactly. I think you just change bezdin to rove here. So is this koach of the rove voiced through some representatives? Or really the koach of those representatives is the rove? Because they're
I think in the Mabit, it's clear that the philosophical framework is clearly koach harov. The question is, did you front load the koach harov into the appointees, like ex ante, l'chatchila at the outset, in which case it's binding no matter what, or it's not clear what the powers of the apotropsim are, and so whether their takana is binding depends on whether it's taken up by rov hakahal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Anyone have thoughts on the Mabit? Let me just add one more comment here. He says at the end, also a nice formulation. He says, in this particular case, he thought the apitropsim, the Shivatu Ve'ir, were making a takana on something that was unusual, not the kind of thing that the Kahal would have explicitly granted power to them to decide. He says, because I came bidavar she'ina matsui, right? Since like COVID, like for example, right? This is not the kind of thing that we reasonably contemplate when we elect communal leadership. Aim koach biyad hamimunim, shehim b'makom shiva tu be'ir, letakna, gam ki yurshu min akilos lefakeach al tzurachah, even though they're appointed as leaders of the communities, because this is an unusual kind of thing, we don't assume that this is the kind of thing they are authorized to make decisions on. Unless the community explicitly agrees to it later on. So in this particular case, he thought that there's no reason to assume that the delegation of power to the Nitzigim included koach to make a takana on this kind of an issue. So I think what's important for us for the Mabit is the clear formulation that the koach shiva tu ve'ir is noveya from the power of the rov ve'ir. In some cases, that could be given, delegated directly to the tu ve'ir such that they can bind everybody in the kihila if they're authorized in these matters. If they're not authorized, then it really matters whether the takana is taken up by the people. Okay. that's to put a close on this first of the last two issues in Rosh Hashanah year. Anybody have a follow-up comment on this before we get to our last point? Gabe, looks like you might have something you want to share, or Yakir. Your closing thoughts on Koach HaRov? No, you're good? Okay. So let's look at our last topic in Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir. This, I think, is a very deep question. What I'm not sure about is to what extent does this bear on the fundamental power of the tzibor to make takanos binding on everybody. So the issue here is when we talk about Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir L'Asiyah Al Kitzasan, does the takana have to, is it sufficient that the takana was willed and taken up or authorized by Rov HaKahal? Or do you actually need authorization by Kol HaKahal, some sort of unanimous assent, agreement of the Kahal in order for the takana to get off the ground? Let me just say that this is a really crucial issue in political philosophy. You know, it's not clear why majority should rule, right? In some issues, we don't think that the majority should have the right to subject the minority to their will. You know, John Stuart Mill in On Liberty thinks that like the most important question in political philosophy that hasn't been dealt with, you know, in the centuries before him is like why the majority should have power to rule over the minority, right? So it's not a trivial assertion that Rov should win the day when it comes to political takanos or enacting legal takanos. If you look at some like contemporary legal theories, even like social contract theories, people like Rawls think that the rules of society have to be such that in principle, every single member of society could buy into them, right? So what gives a government legitimacy is not that majority of the people vote for it, but that the structure of government in principle could be accepted unanimously by each and every person in society. So that's really an attempt to talk about unanimity in the equivalent of Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir. So you get an analogous machlokas in the Rishonim here. You can see, for example, just some Rishonim, like the Rif and the Shuvah and Simya Gimel, just take it as self-evident that when we talk about Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir, it's Rov HaKahal. He says, Ikar HaMinog She'osen Al-Piv, Husha Rov HaKahal Yisiyatu Mzikne HaKahal, V'yataknu Takana. Notice, by the way, the conflation of Minog and Takana again. Background point that is part of the meta issue here, but he just relies on Rove.
Once we're mentioning background issues in the riff, I think it's interesting that they're mitayitim zikneh akal, and that's a requirement for.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, Gabe, I think you mentioned this in the last chabur also, right? Yeah, that the consultation with the zikneh akal is interesting for the relationship in the bottom up and top down part. Right? That's like the chacham ha'ir idea. Yeah, it's very good. But if you look at the Mordechai in two places, he cites Rabbeinu Tam as saying that Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ha'ir L'Asiyah Al Kitzasan Pirush Rabbeinu Tam Shenasis Akitos Midas Kol Tuvei Ha'ir. Here's a little tricky because it says Kol Tuvei Ha'ir and Kol Tuvei Ha'ir, it's like the representatives, but it sounds like you need unanimity, at least amongst the representatives, in order for a takana to be legitimate. He has this other formulation here. It's a little less clear, but you'll see in the other Mordechai, it's clearer. He quotes a Mordechai, Matzah B'Shem Rabbeinu Tam, Rashan B'nai Ha'ir L'Asiyah Al Kitzasan, Hai Rashan Alis Al Asiyah Koi, Pirush, Heicha Dikvar Hisnu B'neihem, Aval Em Lo Hisnu Mitchila Ein Koach B'Bnei Ha'ir L'Achriach Echa B'Bnei Ha'irom L'Masha Yirtzu. The way this is interpreted, or what the way it's taken to mean, is that majority rules in terms of enforcement, but in terms of getting the takana off the ground in the first place, you need universal acceptance by everybody. So what Rabbeinu Tam is saying is, if everybody was masna b'neihem, and agree to a takana, one of the people who agreed to it can't later wiggle out of it by changing his mind. But in order for the takana to be valid on everybody, everybody had to have signed onto it. There's no power of the majority to bind the minority. You can see the Mordechai in Baba Kama and Simon Kufay and Tess makes a similar point. He's citing a Chuva Binatam. You can see from the Chasima Shalom, Rabbi Yaakov or Meir. And Binatam says, Hadam minan Rashan b'nei la'si al kitzasan hachi perusho. Rashan b'nei la'si la'hafsid mama nasa ober la kitzva. She kitzvu v'hismu b'neihem l'das kulan. She nisratza b'tchilas ha'takana v'yata over leha. Right, it sounds like the Gemara is just making this trivial point that if this guy was fine with takana initially and then later changed his mind, you know, they could force him to abide by it. But there's no power of robe over the miut. Right? It's really sounds like the Rabbeinu Tam in all these cases requires unanimity. Marachor Zeruan Simon Reish Chavez also quotes Rabbeinu Tam and some of his Rabbeim as having this view. You can see here at the end of the Tshuva, he says, I'll go back to his view in a second. He says, Harachti lefarish lefish yesh me rabosai shahayu omrim. Dehadetani rashan b'nei ir lekayim tenaam lasi al kitzasam hanimilim kulam neosu yachad v'hu imahem. It's like if they all got together and agreed that this was good and this minority person was amongst them. V'shuv over al tenaam. And then later the guy decides that he wants to breach the agreement. But if they didn't have his consent initially, then they don't have the right to impose their will on him. And then he cites Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Baruch Matzah, B'sefer HaYashar, Shor Rabbeinu Tam, Shapir, Ken Bava Basra, De'ein Rashan, B'nei Ir, La'si'al Kitzasan, Elim Ken Neosu Kulan. It sounds like if it's only if it was congenial to everybody initially, then they have the right to go up against them as a minority later. This is not the Derech HaMelech in the Rishonim. We'll see in our last 10 minutes, we'll see that most Rishonim opt for Rov. But the question that I'm struggling with is, does Rabbeinu Tam's Shita of requiring unanimity, does that vitiate the Takana dimension of Koach HaTzibur? Meaning, does it basically say that Bava Basra Daf Ches is not a Raya that there's this koach bezdin, koach takana imminent in the tzibor? All there is just like a kol tnai shev mamon kayim koach, like literally the power of individuals to make contracts. And so the only way that this yachid could be bound is if it's like a contract, right? Like he literally bought into it. As the Marachar Zeruah says that it's dumya dahani trei tabachi. As Zecharia mentioned earlier in the year, right, there are two girsos in the Gemara about the Tabachi case. He's interpreting it as literally it was a contract between two Tabachim, right? Not that it was the will of majority of the members of the trade to make a Takana. So what I'm wondering is, if you go Rabbeinu Tam's route, does that diffuse the makar from Bava Basra Daf Ches, that there's a Koach Takana, Koach Bezdin imminent in the Kohal altogether? And it just reduces it to a contractual kol tanai shev mamon idea. Zecharia, looks like you had a thought on this.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like if you're just kind of looking at the internal inshas, you don't see a lot of this sort of like, oh, communal bylaws and communal power and robot sibor coming up. It's if you're kind of just going by the letter of the law in terms of the makoros, Bava Basra Daf Ches, first of all, there's no justification given in Bava Basra, and we kind of like we saw a lot of people were stretching like all the way back to the just the abstract a priori of Kabbalah Satorah being binding. It's like it's very understandable how even if that's the majority opinion that such a power could be or lo yitachin that there isn't some power, like if you're kind of much more of a kind of a methodical, rigorous mehechatesi, you're not going to posit this power if there doesn't seem to be there. So I can understand how kind of like a Tosfos kind of very internal to Shas approach would really not posit this.
It's interesting. I would just say, you know, some Rishonim did appeal to Hefker, Bezen, Hefker, but granted, it's a Chiddush, right? It's a Chiddush to read Hefker, Bezen, Hefker into Rashan B'nai Yir. Ramban was appealing to this Koach Cheirem, which is like a Koach Shvua. and you read that in Tava Basa Dafkas. But granted, that's also a chiddush. So you're saying like pshuto kemashmo, you know, Rabbeinu Tam is just going to say, if there is a power to Bnei Yair, it's just the power of Kol Tnai Shel Mamon Kayim. But that would require like, that's just like an, it's just an aggregation of individuals signing on to like a contract or an agreement. There's no.
It makes the Gemara kind of problematic because then it's not saying anything.
Yeah, but as you know, it's just an application of, right, Kol Tnai Shel Mamon Kayim in the aggregate. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So it sounds like you think that there is Rabbeinu Tam's point is to diffuse the conceptual significance of the Gemara, but it's not anything more than just a Kol Tnai Shel Mamon Kayim.
Yeah, I wouldn't think someone would stretch for, oh, you need kulam, but really, I just really think the power resides in the people, and no person can be left out. Like, I don't find that kind of compelling case here.
Anybody disagree with Zecharia's analysis? Feel strongly the other way, or mostly on board? Okay, thumbs up for Zecharia then. Sounds like everyone likes. I definitely find that plausible. I think that makes a lot of sense, right? That would explain why Rabbeinu Tam is pushed in this direction. But I just want to get out the other view very quickly that leans on Rove. And I think the view that assigns, that goes to Rove, might be, you know, leaning more into this like separate koach that the Kahal has, conceptually distinct from the Kol Tnai Shel Mamon Koach, right? That's why you don't need each yachid to sign on to it. It's just this imminent koach bezdin that the Kahal as a collective has. And you know, just like in bezdin, you follow Rove, you're going to follow Rove for the koach at Sibor issue. So you get some interesting formulations here. This tshuva, the marach, or zeruha, again in Simen Reish Kaf Beis, he cites the Ravya. He says, v'zeh heshev Rabbeinu Abi Ezri, a long analysis, and he says, over here, the near lishim echad b'nei ha'ir moche b'davar, she wrote in Roshe HaKol Lasos, oligzor cherem. So if one yachid protests the will of the majority, im rov hakol maskimim chala hacherem. Literally, whatever the rov decides, that's effective to trigger the cherem. Im a rov hiskimu v'hamiyad michu chala hagzera lehem balkarcham. And just, that's right, there's just this brute power that the rov has. He cites a pasuk of agoy kulo, rubo kikulo, shamina mina, shechala hagzera behaskamas harabim, like if there's a Heskim or Rabim, that's just binding on everyone. And we call Hani Shaminan She'en Sarech Lanos Amen Achak Zera Sala. You don't even need the Yechidim to sign on or answer Amen to the Gzera that the Rove makes. Just the Gzera of the Rove on its own is binding, separate from the individuals signing on to it. And he says, "Kivan shetakanasam gzeirasam kayemes vehefgeron hefger b'davar shetakanas hatzibor udichsev kol hashayav lo shosei yamim." He's appealing to the psukim of hefger bezin hefger. Im rov hakol maskim magzeiras roshayim yicholim min adin lechapos alamiyot lios tayis shetakanasam. Again, just a basic koach rov. And he says the reason why I elaborate here is lafuke mishitas rabbeinu tam udiimei, that you require kulam. Then you get these two tshuvos of the Rush, where he just makes a pragmatic argument for why Rove should be sufficient. Though it's interesting that he cites the Koach Bezdin of Achei Rav Mahatos. He says, "Shalta mshnayim oshloshim me'abinonim shebi'ir yichol mochotzi atzman min ahaskama shiasu akol mzeres achirim shiasu ashim davar." To individuals of the right to defeat the jurisdiction of the Rove, at least with respect to them. The Rush responds, "Dak yal esek shal rabim omer Torah Achei Rav Mahatos." Interesting. This, when it comes to these kinds of decision procedures, we follow majority. And he has this pragmatic rationale. I think this shows, by the way, that he thinks the koach hakol is a sui generis koach. right? There wouldn't be a problem of the koach not having, of the kahal not having koach, if it's just the aggregate koach of yechidim. He's assuming that there's got to be this independent koach kahal that the halacha recognizes. It's got to be a possible power. Arguably, if you're Rabbeinu Tam, you wouldn't even get to this point, because you don't buy into this independent koach of the kahal. All you have is the koach of yechidim to bind themselves to their agreements, right? Through Kol Tanai Sheva Mama. Again, the Rashba says in Klal Vav Simen Zayin, he says, "Im hiskimu hakol al davar ein hayachid yachol limchos, ve'al zeh amra Torah achir am lahatos, de'ilo teh mahachi, ein takonas tzibor la'olam, ki masa yaskimu kol hakol l'da'as echad." Again, you wouldn't have this idea of a takonas tzibor if you required unanimous assent. Okay. Anybody have final thoughts on this? On this this machlokas here? This is our wrapping up of Rashaim B'nei Ha'ir La'asiyah Kitzasan. Again, so the main takeaway that I want to leave us with is coming back to Darshin on Lashon Hedyot and the Ramban's phrase that it's Kitnai Bezdin. The main argument here is that minhagim in some cases will have the same halachic force as a takanas bezdin, because many of the takanos bezdin, the power of a takanas bezdin in many instances itself flows from the reservoir of the kahal, and oftentimes you could get at the same halachic norm without going through the procedure of takana through the nitzigim, through the apotropsim. Oftentimes you could generate the halachic norm just through the practices of the kahal. And that's the idea of Darshin on Lashon Hedyot. And that would explain why you could come full circle from Tanai Bezdin. You could arrive at Kit Tanai Bezdin from Darshin on Lashon Hedyot of just the practices of the kahal. I also think that this really provides us with a very strong alternative grounding for the normative force of Minhag HaSochrim. It's not grounded in Kol Tanai Sheva Mamon Kayam. It's not about the private agreements. It's really this separate idea of Takanas HaKahal, almost a kind of legislative power, which doesn't have to be shoehorned into some antecedent contract between the individuals, right? So the Tshuvas HaRashba being a good nafka mina, where he talked about the store case, right? If you bring in customers to the store, there's no contract between any of the parties. If it's customary for a commission to be paid, Minhag HaSochrim applies. Same arguably for Nezikin cases, crash into somebody on the highway. You don't need an antecedent contract to say the stam terms of the agreement implicitly accepted this tenai or this practice. If you think that practices on their own could generate takana power, then you don't need antecedent contracts to make a takana valid. Right? A takana is valid simply in virtue of like the sovereign halachic authority that the members of the community have. Okay, that's the wrap on, you know, Hakafa Aleph, right? The whole first sugya, Kol Kaminhag HaMedina, you know, obviously Minhag HaMedina has limits, right? There's the Minhag Hedyot idea, the Minhag Taos, the Minhag Shtos, the Minhag Vasikin. So it's not writ large over everything. But I do think this provides a very powerful normative framework for thinking about the idea of Minhag HaSochrim. So think about this before Thursday. Thursday we start fresh and clean with Achilas Poalim. All right? Excellent.
Shkaya. Thank you.
Great. Happy election day. Hopefully the world will still be standing, you know, in the weeks and months.
Hopefully.
Our plan is to meet on Thursday. All right, Yasher Koach, everyone.
What's your plans anymore? Our plan was to finish Minhag by half an hour this year.